Hey, State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is back for another Tacky Talk. Tacky, I've missed you for 2 weeks.
I know, Joe. It's been quite some time since we last chatted, and a lot of stuff happens in 2 weeks.
Indeed, here we are, the end of May. We're approaching Memorial Day weekend and the unofficial start of summer. Last time we talked, there was, I don't know, it was probably snow on the ground somewhere.
Well, it was a much wetter, windier, and drizzlier, although May has been a combination of I'm not sure what we're going to do to you today. As we
Exactly. It's been hot, it's been cold. The one constant is the pollen.
That is true. People probably see me around. If you have, you've noticed the eye, a bit of eye swelling and sniffling, my general inability to function well, despite how much Zyrtec I put in my body. It didn't seem to stop, and particularly the eye itching was very bad this year.
Yeah. Gosh, I know a lot of people are suffering. But I remember last time we talked, it was just before the president of South Korea was going to visit the State House. So how did that go?
It was quite a bit of a story. The South Korean consulate had reached out to us mid-April to ask for a resolution from the House recognizing and welcoming the President of South Korea. It took about 5 or so days for my staff and consulate to agree on language that complies with the House counsel's formatting. There's certain things that we don't address. For example, we don't address direct political issues, particularly foreign affairs issues, but we do recognize friendship with countries and provinces that we have a long-standing relationship with, as well as U.S. allies. So we did a friendship resolution, and the Consul General came and picked up the resolution actually during budget week. Then later that day, on that Monday, I think it was the 24th, and today's the 24th. I think the 24th was a Monday in April. Everything's blurring. No, I got a call from the Speaker's office indicating the Speaker was going to be unavailable to be at the head table for the luncheon with the South Korean president. So I got tapped to be his proxy and was able to have lunch, or actually just sit at the head table more accurately, with the governor, the Senate president, secretary Yvonne Hao, and myself, and then representing the state. And then he had the president of South Korea with his I'm trying to It's a weird title. It's a title regarding reunification foreign affairs person, and also the CEO president of one of the largest energy companies in South Korea. And I think it's a ENK and ENS. It's a conglomerate. So I ended up sitting next to that gentleman and had a great 15-minute or so conversation about hydrogen fuel cells and Korea's challenges in energy. If you look at the peninsula, it's actually not a lot of fossil fuels on that peninsula. It's very expensive to import power. They're trying to create alternative, more cost-effective fuel sources, utilizing things like methane, because believe it or not, they have giant garbage mounds, and methane's a natural product. So might as well use the methane as opposed to releasing the atmosphere, which is more dangerous actually than burning fossil fuels. But also try to, convert methane to things like hydrogen, and also try to use other resources such as water, and try to create new energy. And also talk about family, where they're from, and things like that. And met a parliamentarian from the Korean government, and also met the foreign affairs person. There's a lot of handshaking all around. So very exciting to represent the House and the state on an official visit by a dignitary. This is probably easily the most important person I've ever met from a foreign government.
Yeah, it's quite an honor, I'm sure, for you and your staff as well. So, and I just think, I mean, it was mentioned in the mainstream media, but I thought it should have been given a lot more credence, because it's pretty. I mean, think about if our president were to visit South Korea, I'm sure it'd be all over their media.
I agree. I was a little surprised exactly how little media coverage was. This is a top five economy. It is a longtime U.S. ally. While Koreans is not a huge population in Massachusetts in terms of total number, still amounts 25, 30,000 folks in the state. They are a major contributor to our community, and South Korea is among many investors in the state of Massachusetts. So then there are lots of foreign investment going both directions, and of course, education, biotech, and healthcare, as well as technology and seafood and other and tourism, all our major industries, is a big part of the Korean economy too.
Yeah, and it's also a very strategic military position for the Allies, if you will.
Yes, and we do know that there are families in Massachusetts who have family stationed at the DMZ, and some folks that probably have stationed there in the past. And the Korean, I actually went to Korea as a government visit in 2014, an official visit by myself. And they actually have an enormous war memorial recognizing every single individual that has been killed in action, including non-combatants such as medical personnel and the such that are non-combatant countries during the Korean War situation, the Korean War. So the memorial is phenomenal when I visited. And I think people don't realize exactly how much the Korean government recognizes and values our friendship, but also the sacrifices that this country and many other countries made to keep the democracy going.
Yeah. So was his visit, was it just a coincidence, Zaki, that he was here during AAPI month, or was that part of the agenda?
Well, it was not quite AAPI month because it was right at the edge of the end of April.
Oh, okay.
So it was definitely a coincidence when he showed up. It was actually still very unclear about his arrival coming into the week before. The consulate wasn't entirely sure yet. And as you can imagine, when your big, big boss shows up and, last minute asking for things, there was a lot of stress levels when talking to the consulate.
I'm sure you handled it with grace and dignity with your many years of experience in government and diplomacy.
People don't realize at home how much diplomacy I actually do. With a number of different governments, with ambassadors and consul generals, and occasionally we get some parliamentarians from countries, and even religious leaders. However, president of a country is definitely the highest level I've had a chance to sit at a table with.
And yeah, that's neat. So speaking of AAPI month, it was May, right? It is May. We're still in May. So talk about any events or efforts that have been underway.
Well, we're closing in at AIP month right now. And, we put out an editorial, every year from the Asian Caucus. This year, we're pushing again, Shop AIP month. If you do visit a Asian-owned or Pacific Islander-owned business, we encourage people to social media that business, try and encourage more people to visit. There's always gems in all neighborhoods from a business owner, and also try to get people to at least know their local businesses a little better. The governor held a AIP month event at the State House. It's been a long time since we've had AIPI event at the State House. And you all know I've been around for a lot of years, and it's a very rare occurrence to have anything to recognize Asian Americans at all at the State House. So, the governor wrote and proclamation up required by law is a bill that I passed for my House Asian Caucus members to make AIP month one of the last states to do it, it looks like, when I put it together. Wow. We're also doing some other stuff. So my staff and I are putting together a internal briefing regarding the impacts of mental health of Asian American Pacific Islander communities, especially as a result of COVID. The Asian American Pacific Islander Commission held their annual awards dinner earlier this month, and they also had their youth council come visit the State House. And we, had an hour and a half, tour of the House chamber and talked about issues important to them that comes to mind. It's great to see teenagers to ask some pretty inquisitive questions about what's going on. There's a few things going on. Obviously, the Cory Banquet, Queen's Asian Resource Banquet, was this month in award ceremony. Speaker Mariano received the Visionary Award this year. Last night was the South Cove Manor annual dinner.
Wasn't aware of that. Okay.
Yeah. So South Cove Manor is on Washington Street. It's the first and only linguistic, culturally competent Asian lung care assistance facility.
Yep.
And it was rehab as well. So that was last night. I'm aware there's been things like the AIP run, 5K run for anti-Asian racism. Charity run was this past Saturday. I didn't get to that one. There's just so much to get to. And, we also got some stuff in the budget. We continue to fund the AIPI commission. We continue to fund the Asian Racism Study at UMass Boston Institute of Asian American Studies, which, again, I like to say this all the time, it's the second state to do this kind of study, and the only state that actually uses a federally recognized educational institution for Asian American studies. So, you know, that is a big deal to me, and it will have long-term benefits. Not just kind of like, you know, do some grants here and there, but, you know, the lack of information studies will have long-term policy benefits. So, it's been a busy month. Of course, it's also Memorial Day as well. You know, Island of Flags was this past Sunday memorial. I didn't make it to the Squantum island naming, unfortunately. But this Friday, there'll be a Beach with No School and Snug Harbor School at about exactly the same time. Memorial, I'll be at Snug Harbor School. I've historically always gone to Snug Harbor School on Friday morning for their memorial. And of course, you have the Memorial Day parade on Sunday. So a little bit different schedule from the past, because we used to do the Morissette recognition, but Larry Norton's passing.
Yep.
I do miss Larry a lot. Larry put together a whole lot of Memorial Day and veteran recognition events all through May and also all through November. So, you know, this, again, the impact of one person's life, you know, it's definitely felt. Particularly on months where, put so much time and effort into.
He was a proud proponent for all things veterans. It's definitely his passing is felt for sure throughout the veterans organizations. And it's good to see you at the Quincy College commencement as well.
I don't think I was at the commencement, was I?
No, weren't you? I thought I saw you there, Ted.
No, I didn't make the commencement. I'm going to unfortunately miss both high school graduations. I'm having medical checkup, which I won't be told, don't go into details about because it's not pleasant.
Okay. But,
I'm at that age where certain types of medical testing is required, and I will be unavailable for this year's graduation, unfortunately, at the high schools.
Okay. Well, preventative diagnostics is very important. So, we don't want you to miss that.
Yeah, those of you know the multi-day experience knows what I'm talking about. We probably shouldn't go into details about that issue.
No, good point. Although I was reading something about that process changing and getting much more pleasant in the future.
I think there's no human in the U.S. who can't help that coming fast enough.
That's true.
It was a hitch age 50.
So you mentioned the budget, the House version is done, right? You wrapped it up not too long ago.
We wrapped it not too long ago. Not a lot of public policy pieces in the budget. We're still very confident that, you know, we're going to make budget numbers. You've seen in the press that the budget numbers are slightly lower this year from last year. However, you know, that's the capital gains is a big part of that decline. Capital gains is not part of our baseline budget. Capital gains is part of the rainy day fund, stabilization fund. So it is this whole contextual issue when you break it down, you know, what does it really mean? And, you know, our numbers regarding the rainy day fund is probably going to be adjusted, you know, as the market and the housing market, stock market and housing market continues to be cooler when it comes to the stock market, just erratic. And, you know, this was not unexpected. I mean, so, you know, I think there'll be some adjustments to the rainy day fund, still very robust at near $9 billion projection for next year. Still very robust, but I think there'll be some like adjustments. So, you know, Quincy again does well. I mean, we got some money for Germantown Neighborhood Center, Appreciation Resources. We got some state police patrols for Walson Beach and Furnishburg Parkway. The consideration to fund the Quincy Fire Department hazmat program. And of course, you know, just scattering money to various not-for-profits and local projects through the budget process, including another substantial contribution to the John Adams Museum.
Oh, right.
Which I think we put in another $500,000. I think the speaker is very supportive. And I'm trying to remember, I believe it was another $500,000. So over two funding cycles, and it's $1 million of state money, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be a multi-million dollar project when it comes to fruition. So it's a good start for sure.
Yes. And, you know, as people realize, I'm a history buff, so I love this stuff to begin with.
Yeah.
So the delegation's very supportive of that, as like I said, among a whole bunch of other issues in the budget.
So. Yeah. But state revenues are not kind of down, aren't they? Last time I read, anyway.
They are. As I just mentioned, you know, it's the capital gains issue.
Is that all it is? It's not like, I don't know, excise tax or sales tax or motel tax or food tax?
The excise taxes, well, the motel taxes have come back. Hotel motels come back because tourism's returned. It's much more robust than it was last year. Car rentals also follow that as well, in terms of, particularly the city of Boston has special taxation on these things. They have a higher tax rate, but it's just for the city of Boston. But I mean, sales tax has slowed down, but also we're in an inflationary period. Mm. So you're actually paying more tax, even though you're probably buying less by volume because of more hyperinflation. I still think it's going to take a few months as the CPI numbers show it's going down. It's still going to take a few months for that to catch up. It's always constantly lagging. So we'll probably see some sales tax impact probably towards the wintertime as prices stabilize, level out. Hopefully wages also level out in the process. And of course, you know, like I said, you know, the stock market is crazy. Home prices here are still okay. I mean, they're not like spiking massive, but also not massive declining. Commercial property is going to be a problem. That's been a lag in a commercial property sales and rentals is likely going to be declining as we continue this hybrid world. So
yeah, companies are cautious now. They're not going to buy these huge, you know, multi-gajillion dollar buildings. They don't think they need them.
Absolutely. And as you can all tell, I'm not wicked concerned about the decline revenue numbers. It looks big, but you know, between a combination rainy day fund, we still have surplus money from last year in a trust fund, as well as, like I said, it's tied to cap gains, which means we just readjust the stabilization fund numbers going to next cycle. We'll be all right. Listen, I'm not super concerned.
Okay. I don't know if, did you read the report from the Mass Taxpayers Foundation about the change in demographics, Jackie, that's going on? Younger folks leaving, older folks retiring.
Yeah, I've not read that report, but I've read several news articles on this. And there's a little bit of information we've been to be cautious of because they've been using like odd data in news media. And Mass Taxpayers is much more scientific. I mean, people are using things like U-Haul numbers. I'm like, where's state? There's a lot of students. U-Hauls aren't unusual. They kind of like rush in the fall and they rush out in late spring. So
it's true. Yeah, it's not a good indicator, right?
It's a terrible indicator. And homes, if there's a massive rush out, these people are not selling their homes because you know, we do have a housing shortage. So I do believe there is people leaving. It's not clearly impacting our economy in terms of housing because vacancies would create more of a housing price stabilization as opposed to rising, and there'll be more housing available. So I suspect that a portion of this population may be changing residency, but they're not giving up their very valuable home in Massachusetts.
Or they're just leaving their parents' home.
That's also true, too. As a person who takes care of his mom in her much older age now, you know, I'm aware of that, too. And, you know, young people leaving is not new, folks. This is a challenging state regarding employment, especially in the greater Boston area. Younger folks like the life of Manhattan. Surveys in the past have shown that younger folks are willing to pay higher taxes in exchange for better amenities that suit their lifestyles. And this is not a state that is Los Angeles or San Francisco or Chicago or New York, where you have these, quite frankly, you know, live hard, play hard, enjoy nightlife type cities. It's not.
Right.
And this is not new. This has been a trend going on for a better part of 20 plus years.
Yeah, it's true. Boston's a really big, small city, you know, or big, small town, if you will. Yeah, you're right. The conversation's been going on for decades.
Absolutely. About, you know, late night bars, you know, local public transit running all night, changing how we do housing affordability for new professionals. This ain't a new conversation. What a new conversation, and outflow of young folks will continue. And ironically, because I work in things like the film tax credit, you know, people actually leave and return once they decide to have families. So it's not surprising to see people kind of boomerang back once they decide to raise a family where, you know, they want to be in a place they're familiar with and a higher quality standard of living.
Yeah.
So this ain't new. Retirees, again, not a new thing. It's just the volume now because of the massive amount of people leaving the workforce. People have very much reevaluated quality of life as they've aged. So, you know, they're not working to 70 or 75.
Right.
And if you were smart in 2021, you cashed out.
Right. Yeah. If you could, you did for sure. That's why we're still working, Jackie.
Yeah, I know. I'm a long way from cashing out.
Likewise.
But I mean, a lot of people during COVID reevaluated lives. And I really, really believe that still.
Yeah, plus, you know, the boomers are coming of retirement age now. You know, they just are.
Yeah, your house was worth a whole lot of money by the end of 2021. And even going to early 2022, your 401k, 457s, 403bs, you know, were doubled. Cash out.
Yeah.
But go
Strike
to,
while the iron's hot, as they say, right?
yeah, go to annuity or shift things to money market and start the drawdown.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I really believe that it takes time for those numbers to catch up because once they kind of settle in their retirement numbers for living, they kind of reevaluate and live, and your home is still your biggest asset for most families. So, that's I really am not surprised. I mean, people
Okay.
make a big deal about it, and I think it's important to keep in mind. But I mean, the last 3 years are very unusual, and people's life decisions have changed.
Yeah. All right. So no alarm bells in your world, at least, which is good.
It's natural. It's a natural occurrence.
I want to talk a little bit, seeing as we're talking about money, the debt ceiling debate in Washington.
Yeah, well, we're back 2011. You morons trying to figure out how to make this work. I swear, this is just exhausting. And I think everyone agrees with me on this one. I mean, as I was telling friends this weekend, a friend's goddaughter graduated. Her parents came in from China to see her. We took her to lobster because you can't get lobsters anywhere else, really.
Interesting.
And we're talking about that stuff, and you know, it's a funny human behavior where people individually it's not so bad to deal with. Put them in a room together, suddenly the intelligence level declines immensely.
It depends on what faction you're pandering to at the moment, I think.
Yeah, particularly in Congress, I swear. I mean, you deal with people one on one, yeah, pretty good intelligent conversation. You stick them in a room together, that goes, what happened? Right?
It's kind of like when you switch the TV cameras on. People's
It's like,
personalities change. Yeah.
and they start to try to appeal to these smaller demographics that is their voting base. Because again, we were discussing a bit earlier. We discuss actually quite often now about the fact that primaries are a shrinking demographic. And you know, you're trying to play to this very small demographic as opposed to a larger population and bite the bullet or, you know, a bad vote, depending on what political party or persuasion or voter base you have. You know, we call those bad votes because it rubs up against those folks. And sometimes good decisions for the benefit of all of us is called a bad vote for a small demographic of primary voters. And guess what? They won't do it. And it's very apparent they won't do it down in DC. And I also remind folks there's a lot of like bad rhetoric here. Republicans are looking to cut spending on a budget they have not written yet,
That's right. Yeah, that has not been talked about, but that is absolutely true. Yep.
which is perplexing because the president doesn't set the budget. It's set by Congress.
That's right.
So even if they want to reduce spending, they actually have to do it in the budget going forward. The debt ceiling is paying for obligations already approved by Congress, including all the COVID stimulus money.
It's your bills that you things you've already bought, right?
Yeah, and approved of. And people are, you know, not surprised at this point. The biggest budget busters is called Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid, especially Medicare, as we talk about boomers, right? Aging retirement.
Yes, yep.
And the largest holder of US debt is the Social Security Trust Fund, as well as all these other federal trust funds, because it's guaranteed money with minimal or no risk, actually, of not being paid back. And a lot of foreign governments and private entities, like you and me, will buy US Treasuries because it's safe.
Right.
You gotta get your money. It's everyone buys US Treasuries globally because it's literally the safest thing you can buy. And this stuff makes people panicky. And we've never defaulted ever in the history of US. And we're always good to pay our bills, but it does cause some global panic about you know our ability to pay. And you know the stock market reflects this, the treasury market reflects this. And you know, the US dollar continues to be the reserve currency of the planet. More than 60% plus of countries use the reserve dollars, their emergency reserve, because it's more valuable than gold. And you know, almost 90% or close to 90% of all transactions are done in US dollars. You're gonna buy gems in South Africa, you're gonna use dollars as the price value, your price determinant between two parties because the US dollar value holds.
It's ironically, even you even buy gold with US currency.
That's correct. I mean, Warren Buffett said it best during the Berkshire Hathaway meeting. I got a couple of little clips of that, news clips, and he's like, there's more physical money, whether it be electronic. I mean, I know money is electronic. But I mean, there's more actual printed money than there are, you know, like it's like $30 trillion plus dollars or whatever amount. It's like, you know, a insane amount, mostly in $100 bills. And he looks at this stuff regularly, and more than 50% of that money is not inside the United States. Printing money in the U.S. Is not causing inflation because most of it isn't here. It's held by many countries, corporations, and private individuals as their reserve currency. And they hoard U.S. dollars. They don't hoard gold.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, the U.S. debt ceiling and our ability to pay our bills, you know, has a global impact. And on the state level, it's our reimbursements. You know, things like Medicare, Medicaid, which you guys know as MassHealth, is 50% reimbursed. A lot of our healthcare programs, education programs, environmental programs has federal components. And a lot of infrastructure projects from the ARPA monies and even back to the Obama era bond monies on infrastructure transportation continues to be rolling out. And the state comes up with its 10 or 20% share, but you know, the rest is U.S. Treasuries.
Mm-hmm.
So
shovel ready projects, right?
Yeah, this is a big deal that impacts us in the state level because how our budgets are tied together because of the federal programs. So, you know, we run the program, but it's federally paid for or federally reimbursed or partially federally reimbursed.
So
we're kind of our level weighing this out as well. And, you know, during the Trump administration, they raised the debt ceiling a few times with a Democratic Congress. With minimal controversy, and we're back to 2011 when the Moody's guys in D.C. lowered our rating. First time we had a debt rating lower than Johnson & Johnson, which has is one of the few companies that has a AAA rating.
Interesting.
So we'll see.
Let's hope politics takes a back seat and the bigger picture is prioritized.
Agreed. And like I said, the rhetoric from any politician in D.C., you must all take with a degree of caution because, I mean, it's almost like they're shirking responsibility. The House of Representatives, as I know, because the U.S. Constitution is based on the state constitution here, you know, is the place the budget starts.
Right.
So the fact that, you know, they're deflecting to say it's the president's responsibility, it isn't. It's the House's responsibility to put a budget forward.
Right. So as Bill Belichick would say, do your job.
Yeah, pretty much. And some folks down there need to get over themselves and realize that, if you are able to explain yourself well, recognize the demographic you work, live and work in, and you can explain a so-called bad vote. Well, that's your job.
Yeah. Since last we talked, Jackie, the U.S. attorney for Massachusetts has resigned.
Yeah, you all saw it. Rachel Reynolds has resigned. Huge reverberations in the Boston Globe because they were pushing her hard. Politicians that endorsed her in the state, you know, are now kind of not looking good. I am always still very perplexed why U.S. senators are allowed to make recommendations for an agency whose job is to investigate us. I'm still very perplexed by that. I don't understand how that works. But I mean, there's a lot of egg on the face of folks. That really pushed her hard. And this is, if you read a 160-page report, I mean, I only got through the first 40 pages. It is captivating. And of course, the DOJ and the Inspector General did not name names of politicians that she was communicating with, but, you know, they made a lot of allusions to it, right? They say, you know, a member of Congress, right? Boston City Councilor, but they never named names. Clearly, when you read through it, this is not about going just to a fundraiser regarding Joe. No. Biden. They flat out told her not to go, and this is how you do it if you do go under the Hatch Act, which prohibits federal employees from engaging in partisan politics. There's all kinds of rules in the Hatch Act what you can and cannot do. But you want to get deeper, particularly the hating component where she was trying to manufacture evidence or manufacture an investigation more accurately, or kind of create a rumor of an investigation coming from her offices. Just plain irresponsible and largely abuse of power. And as you kind of read through it regarding things like Celtics tickets and putting her office to try to get things for other people. You know, nothing's better when a U.S. Attorney General's office calls you for stuff. I mean, this is duh moment, right? You're a very powerful law enforcement agency and calling people for things. I mean, it's clear about abuse of power, which also now leads to a real good question about what was she doing at the Suffolk DA's office?
It's a very good point because, right, she'd been in that role for quite some time.
Yeah, so what was she doing there? I mean, this stuff doesn't just happen overnight on a power trip. And her attorney was great. It's like, well, she's used to not having a boss, essentially, what she said. And he said, it's like, well, the problem isn't her, it's the ruse. The ruse are the problem. Like, well, okay, that's your defense? Oh, boy, this is going to be pretty awful. So, yeah. You know, if she pushes this hard, I mean, they'll push the U.S. Department of Justice and Inspector General and Office Special Counsel. They'll all push back on her. And I'm sure the phone call with Garland's people was so pleasant for everyone. Yes, I'm being facetious. As she tried to defend herself until she probably saw the summary of the report.
That's why she resigned, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, I think she realized she couldn't bluff her way through the conversation. And yeah. Also, it's embarrassment for the Democratic Party. She couldn't get out of the Judiciary Committee to begin with. And Majority Leader Schumer actually had to use a procedural maneuver to push her floor, push her nomination directly to the floor to get it out of committee. And then they had to push it again.
That's right, twice. Yeah.
Twice to get her nominated. And they actually had to bring Kamala Harris, the vice president, as the president of the Senate to break a tie-breaking vote twice. And as you guys can guess, this becomes political fodder for the Republican Party, particularly in states where you have Democrats at high risk, especially U.S. senators. She didn't just embarrass us in terms of locally. Because I didn't endorse her, by the way, just put it on the record. I don't do that stuff. She also embarrassed the U.S. Senate, the president, and frankly, you know, all of New England, too. I can't emphasize that enough. She embarrassed all of us. It doesn't matter the political party persuasion. She represents us in law enforcement. So, you know, will she get disbarred is the next question. Yeah, there's a distinct possibility here.
To your point about her role during Suffolk County DA, I think a lot of defense lawyers are going to start looking at their cases again.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of employees who are fearing retribution by her, you know, may come forward now. And there may be another story. And, you know, Suffolk DA Hayden is already probably taking a deep look into the office. And, you know, he has to decide himself, you know, what level rises to a point of a further investigation, or he can kick it out to the state inspector general, for example, or kick it up to the state attorney general. So, you know, we'll see if DA Hayden has enough there and see what may happen. But yeah, this is largely embarrassing and terrible. And, you know, I'm also happy that, you know, good civil servants won't let bad behavior go by in government.
Right. Yeah. It does indicate that the process, you know, as you pointed out, it had to be overridden twice. So process does have some validity to it and does, you know, does have some legitimacy to it because she was flagged multiple times.
Yeah. We should thank, you know, especially the people in the U.S. Attorney General's office and in the Boston office in particular, which, you know, flagged the issue, advised her, did everything you could to keep her on the straight and narrow. And when it got too much, the Inspector General came in, the DOJ followed, and Special Counsel followed, and it required her own employees to just flat out tell their bosses in D.C., you know, we've got a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, speaking of audits, Jackie, how's the audit of the legislature going from the state auditor's office?
Nothing.
Okay.
Shortest explanation of the day. We're going to wait it out. She's probably going to sue us.
Oh, really?
And we'll wait and see what happens.
Okay.
Right now, there's no interest by either branch to comply with her. We still believe we're co-equals in government. Neither one of us is superior to each other. And we still believe there is no mandate. We do practice our own internal auditing system, which we've been doing for decades. Speaker and Senate President indicated that. I don't know when these audits occur because it's just an office function like any other government and business entity that, you know, you do these regular audits. So, yeah, I mean, she also doesn't really say what she's looking for. generally when you have an audit, they do say what they're looking for specifically.
Okay. Yeah. I just wondered if there's any update on that because I hadn't heard. So well, obviously neither of you.
No, I'm waiting for her to criticize her existing audits. I mean, it's not like she can't get those. And she wants to criticize the existing audit program, which is done by a private entity outside of us. Well, let her criticize those audits. But I've noticed that she's been very quiet on that.
Okay, I will see if I can reach out to her office and get any information and let you know. How's that?
It doesn't hurt. You seem to be in the know more than I do sometimes. And this is part of why this is such a great conversation on our weekly or now bi-weekly basis, right? I mean, you have stuff I don't know about.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good sharing of information. I want to talk about GoPuff, the home delivery service. I guess, as I understand, they lost their delivery license for alcohol statewide. Is that right?
Yeah, and they might lose their individual licenses too if the investigation continues. The ABCC, I know Howie Carr likes to pick on that agency, but it really does a great job in terms of enforcement. It really does. Not all local enforcement is equal in the state. Quincy is a great local enforcement regarding alcohol licenses and abuse of those licenses and compliance, but not every community does a great job. And the ABCC, with a couple of dozen folks, does a phenomenal job, not just these type of situations, but general license violations of underage serving, improper delivery and non-compliance and documentation. And also internet sales, illegal internet sales. So they do a lot of work, a lot of credit to the ABCC, especially the investigators and the staff for the phenomenal work they do. Very disappointing for a startup business that's not even a decade old from a couple of college students with a great idea. And it ain't that hard to comply. I'm dead serious. This is just simple identification as you're trying to buy alcohol. In a store, this has been my nervousness about takeout alcohol. This has been nervous about takeout alcohol from restaurants. I think I've expressed that a few times. I certainly have.
I thought of you immediately when this happened because I know you've been concerned about this for quite a while.
Yeah, particularly like DoorDash and Uber Eats. I promise you, they are not checking your identification when they drop off takeout booze, and they've been caught doing takeout booze at public places, not just like at people's homes. So I do have a lot of nervousnesses, and even GoPuff is a retail store, not a restaurant. It does reflect an identity problem here. The ABCC had told me at one point that when they did any kind of check on delivery alcohol, whether it be takeout or delivery services, their sampling showed that, 100% failure rate at some point.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And the question is liability again. Who's liable, the delivery service or the business? A GoPuff's case, all the delivery service is done by them. So it's pretty easily definable who's responsible.
Yeah.
But if we go forward on more permanent takeout alcohol, particularly from restaurants, I need to think about a regulatory structure to ensure responsibility. And, because you're the one to authorize the sale, even though you weren't using third-party delivery, but it's your license that created the sale. So if we go that direction, which I don't know if we are, because it's continual conversation, and as I said to the Globe and others, it's new data coming up regarding substance abuse issues and drunk driving and so forth. It's always a one-year lag as the data is put together. It gives me some thoughts moving down the road. But right now, I mean, extended takeout dining, outdoor dining, so-called. We had outdoor dining before we passed this law, okay? But take out alcohol for restaurants another year, and then booze delivery has always existed as a existing license by retail, and you saw that GoPuff got tagged up bad, and frankly, they should lose their licenses.
It makes me wonder too about marijuana delivery. Is the same problem happening there?
Yeah, that's overseen by the Cannabis Commission, not by the ABCC. That is a legit question. We do have a marijuana committee. It's not in my purview. I'm the alcohol guy, not the marijuana guy. So we do have a cannabis committee. And that's probably a conversation I need to have with the chair of that committee at some point down the road. Cannabis delivery has been approved by the Cannabis Commission. They did that, I think, middle of last year, I think, because Yeah, they were very slow. That's always been in the law, but they were like super slow in rolling it out. So, I mean, again, same question, right? Use a third-party service versus your own service, you know, who's responsible and so on and so forth. I mean,
Right.
I think people take too lightly, you know, sometimes controlled substances going out into public.
Yeah. So this company, I guess they were fined $6 million. So does that is the case over? Are they going to appeal, do you know, or what happens next?
Well, they can appeal directly to Superior Court. So
Oh,
that's
okay.
the next option if they will do that. But it'd be very hard to win because these investigations, courts won't overturn. And
Right.
also, another thing you put at risk is that pending license transfers. They've been buying licenses all over the state. I think one of the biggest ones were like $1.2 million or $1.4 million out of a Southie business. And they did buy the license from the Regal Beagle. People remember that liquor store up in Norfolk Downs, if I remember correctly the name of the store. And they were going
That's
to move.
right. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, down they're going to they have a facility at Schuylkill Street where they're going to lock that out of. And those licenses have been held up in terms of approval at APCC since last summer. So, you know, even though the municipality has approved the transfer, the final generally normally just stamp and go.
Right.
APCC, they slowed down that process because of these pending investigations. Now they have this monster violation. You know, those pending licenses of approval and future licenses approved by the APCC is going to be maybe not happening.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see Quincy Licensing Board takes action as well.
Agreed.
Let's see. Oh, one other thing. I know you have to go quickly, Jackie, but I see that the Senate rejected online lottery sales. What's going on
Yeah,
with that?
I'm not surprised at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean the inside baseball here is that the House and Senate regarding things like the budget and bond bills will not agree, particularly on policy matters. So
Oh.
if one branch does it, the other one will not. Some of the budget areas, which are pretty common sense, like, you know, school lunches, Chapter 70 education money, you know, they're not going to get a huge fist fight over those things. But especially on policy issues, the policy of the Senate is that we will not adopt anything that's the same as the House, even innocuous stuff. I mean, technical things, right? It's not just big, overwhelming policy like iLottery. I mean, even small
Oh.
technical issues they won't concur with. It is very frustrating. I've never seen this as a policy of the Senate. It's been since Stan Rosenberg's presidency. Some years back, it has become like an official kind of like the stance of the Senate. Before that, you know, it was if it made some common sense, they would. Now, iLottery is a bit more controversial, so I'm not surprised they didn't do it at all. But to keep in mind, they did do iLottery in a couple of different economic development bills in the past. So last year and this year is the first two times the Senate, the House, I'm sorry, went first in this matter. And the
Yeah.
Senate flat out rejected, even though they've approved it and passed economic stimulus bills, and it held up in conference committee and didn't come out. So, you know, it'll be interesting how this goes regarding the House and Senate conference committee negotiations, which will start next week on the budget. And, you know, obviously, we'll hope to have a budget in place by June 30 of the sent to the governor. There'll be a supplemental budget approved sometime in June to continue to pay our bills. Again, like I said, I'm not too concerned about the revenue shortfalls.
Okay.
More concerned about the debt ceiling debate, much more concerned. And whether or not we have
The
to use,
state won't default, but the country might.
we might have to use some emergency rainy day money or other trust funds and move some money around if they default or if they go bet past deadline and still don't default. We might have to shuffle some money to float while waiting for our federal reimbursement. So, you know, I'm sure that the administration and House Senate Ways and Means have that in mind. But yeah, that's just how it is. I mean, just as an inside baseball issue between the two branches. And yeah, you called the Senate president. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know if they would agree to a tacky talk.
No, I would gather the odds are better getting the speaker before you get the Senate president.
Definitely, speaking of gambling, I would definitely put my odds on that.
Well, I got
We'll
dash
see
off.
you around we'll see you around the bend on Memorial Day, I'm sure.
Yeah, I got a dash. Yeah, you will see me around the bend. I will definitely be at Snug Harbor on next Friday. I'm sorry, this Friday, and I'll be in the parade on Monday. You know, I got to dash off in a few minutes. I'm having lunch with Secretary Yvonne Howe. She's the Secretary of Economic Development in the state. So I actually oversee, my committee oversees a number of different agencies that she has purview over. So it's part of the job, obviously, as you guys know, to kind of get to know folks you have to work with or you oversee in some cases. You know, it'd be good. It'd be a good chance. And it turns out she's a huge sports fan. So big basketball person.
Oh, okay. Well, so she's on pins and needles now because it's game five. I'm coming back to Boston.
Yeah, I'm still not wicked optimistic about this, as you guys can.
Well, it would be a first if they came back, so wouldn't that be something?
It would be something. Yeah, we can get over my consternation about Boston sports on a different call.
That's right. Yeah, we'll do that. Okay. And I think, Tacky, this is the first Tacky Talk that we'd ever talked about the MBTA, so there you go.
that's a special conversation, too. oh yeah, but as you all know, there's no shortage of things to talk about, you know, on local, state, and federal government stuff, and you know, even some common news, like we didn't talk about the descending of the Swifties, so to speak, in Boston, and graduation season hitting at the same time, and you couldn't have a convergence of more people coming into the area in one weekend than this past weekend, plus all the walks and half marathons all over the place.
Yeah, it's an amazing time of year, it really is. And then July 1st hits and everything just kind of dies.
Yeah, we get through the July 4th, 1st to 4th, and I am looking forward to a quiet period.
Yeah,
it's amazing how, you know, in this kind of weird COVID world we're living in, that, you know, this is the year more so than last where everything is coming back to a more of a norm.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the point where I ask you to please give out your contact information for folks.
Sure. 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370. Mash a button if no one picks up. We are getting a lot more phone calls than we have. I'm very thankful for people calling us directly. We do get back to you as timely as we can. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. You know, I do look at your emails. Constituent services come first. And I do not check my email every 4 minutes. I'm not, I just don't understand people that do that constantly, constant refreshing and see them on their phones. You know, we have at Tacky Chan Twitter account. We do have State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. I do not tell you what I'm having for dinner on these accounts. They are work accounts. We do publish information. For example, DCR lifeguards, we need lifeguards. Please, if you can, strong swimmers, need a summer job, up to $1,000 bonus, and between $22 and $27 an hour this summer. Never seen money like that in my life for a summer job. So, you know, things like that are obviously posted on Twitter and Facebook, but strongly encourage. And, you know, obviously, QA TV like this, my tackychan.org website, malegislature.gov, if you want to keep up with legislation at the state level. Of course, you know, us here at QA TV, and definitely, you know, check in on Joe's podcast in the morning, and his brief news updates.
Good to talk to you, Tacky. I'm glad we're able to catch up, and let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you soon, Joe.